Good morning. Good to see y'all. All kinds of green and blue behind you, holding us up. Spring, moving us forward. So today, I'm going to talk about an essay by Dogen Zenji called Uji. And many of you know Dogen is the founder of Soto Zen. So like our great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandpa. And he's pretty great. That's what I'm trying to say. And Uji means, could be taken to mean a few things. It could mean for the time being, X. We're all going to hear a talk. For the time being, it's spring. For the time being, I feel the way I feel. Also means being time or time being. Maybe I'll talk about that a little bit. this essay, Dogen's teaching in general and this essay in particular are challenging, both in terms of being able to be understood and in terms of that they challenge basic views that we have of the world. So, it is not my goal to confuse you, but you may find yourself going, "What?" at some point during this talk. And this is actually okay, because Zen teachings are often paradoxical or very challenging, ungraspable. They're sometimes just ungraspable. And the world is ungraspable. The main problem is we think we're going to get a handle on it and have it all figured out. So having teachings that actually allow us to mutually enter into ungraspability, it can open us up to meeting the ungraspability of how life is, how it keeps flowing, how the things we want to control are not in our control. So this can help us to open up our hands and not hold so tight. And this makes me think of a poem written by a Chinese Zen nun named Zhen Ryu, or something like that. She said, long time ago, she wrote, "I suddenly find myself upside down on level ground. When I pick myself up, I find there's nothing to say. If someone should ask me what this is all about, smiling, I'd point to the pure breeze and the bright moon." Now, the irony of writing a poem about how you don't have anything to say is already amusing to me. I suddenly find myself upside down on level ground. When I pick myself up, I find there's nothing to say. If someone should ask me what this is all about, smiling, I'd point to the pure breeze and the bright moon. The main reason I think of this now is I suddenly find myself upside down on level ground. The level ground of whatever this is. This moment is always just level. It's what it is. But sometimes, instead of feeling like we know exactly what everything is, we get upside down and we go, "What is this?" That's actually pretty good. It's actually pretty good to just suddenly be upside down and go, "What is going on?" So Uji, like I say, has a number of ways it can be thought of. The word is meaning. For the time being, so in Japanese, my understanding is you could say uji, or at least in Dogen's time, uji just meant, for the time being, this is happening. So it indicates temporarily, things are this way. For the time being, I'm going to give a talk. So it's a very common usage. But it also means time being, or being time. Now, for the time being is pretty good, because, well, the thing is we really shouldn't have to say for the time being dot dot dot, because everything's for the time being. Yeah, that's pretty much the way things are, right? They keep changing, but we feel like we have to qualify things in this regard. He'll go right at that issue from the beginning of the essay. Let me just look at this. Oh, and he says in here, Dogen is generally not averse to just calling out people for being wrong. People who are familiar with Dogen's work can have some laughs, because sometimes, frankly, he's pretty pointed about it. But towards the beginning of the essay, Uji, he says, because the signs of time's coming and going are obvious, people do not doubt it. Although they do not doubt it, they do not understand it. So, from the very beginning, we're going to be in this position of thinking, oh, we kind of get what time is. There's the past, creates conditions, that, and then we have a present, and then something's going to happen later. Well, we all go, yeah, sure. That's pretty obvious, right? And because the signs of time's coming and going are obvious, people don't doubt it. Most of us go through our life not going, what is time? Although, amazingly, when my son was about 8 years old, he looked at me and he said, Dad, what is time? And I said, I'll get back to you in about 30 years. But he couldn't make it this morning because he's working. And frankly, I don't know what time is. But he says, we don't doubt it, but we don't understand it. We think, oh, because I don't doubt that, because it's so rock bottom in my conception of how the world is, I must understand it. That's how we view life a lot of the time. All massive mountain of assumptions on which we base our lives. And time is problematic. It's problematic the way we view time. And he is going to use some medicine, Dogen, to help us loosen up, maybe. Let's see. We'll see how loose we can get. So he opens up the essay with, he doesn't just ease into it with something easy to understand, but that's okay. I'm just going to read it for you, and you don't really have to get this right now. That's just fine. An ancient Buddha said, for the time being, stand on top of the highest peak. For the time being, proceed along the bottom of the deepest ocean. For the time being, 3 heads and 8 arms. For the time being, an 8 or 16 foot body. For the time being, a staff or a whisk. For the time being, a pillar or a lantern. For the time being, the sons of Zhang and Li. For the time being, the earth and sky. No one seems to know who he's quoting here, but I'm going to paraphrase. For the time being, amazing spiritual experience. For the time being, total confusion. For the time being, really aggressive, I've got it figured out, I'm going to make it all happen. And for the time being, resplendent, serene compassion. For the time being, a Zen teacher. For the time being, a microphone and a piece of paper. For the time being, ordinary Joes and ordinary Janes. And for the time being, the earth and sky. Everything, what he's saying here at the beginning is, everything's included. In what, when I say time being, everything's included. Buddha's included. Demons are included. You are included. Inanimate objects are included. Nature is included. All-inclusive teaching, or in one of the subsequent essays in this text, all-inclusive study. So normally we might want to think something is not included in time. And this creates some problems. Let me use this example. Picture you're watching a really great nature movie. They're really fun. You can get your kids to go to sleep. It's really good. So there's a picture of a rock. And it's time-lapse. So water pours on it from the sky and it dries up. And the sun keeps going. You ever see this? The sun comes through. Then shadow and darkness and light. And leaves grow up around it. And then they wither. That rock looks like it's fixed, and everything else is changing around it. And Dogen is saying, not so, there is no rock. Or you could say the rock is changing too. either way, when we look at that, our mind goes, oh, that one thing is fixed and the other things are changing. So right after this thing where he says everything's included in time, he says, for the time being here means time itself is being and all being is time. Uji means time itself is being and all being is time. So this is the same point, basically. There aren't things that exist outside of change. And this is maybe, if you have some things that you believe in that are outside of change, that's okay. But Dogen is telling you that's not helpful. It's all right. You can have your own beliefs. And there are a lot of ways people, you know, there's beliefs of transcendence and stuff that's like, oh, this is eternal. Now, we may talk about the timeless in the context of Zen. And actually, Dogen will talk about the timeless in terms of time being. But that's different than eternal. It's different than eternal. And so process is what being is, and being is process. But we tend to think some things are process and some aren't, and that causes some pain. You know, we think my bicycle should always work. It's not a process, it's a thing. And then I'm riding my bike, and it's great, because I know this bike is just a bike. But what I forget is, in the moment where the chain falls off, and I'm lying in the street, that what the bike is an object with a chain that has fallen off. I still think it's a bike that works. Why doesn't my bike work? Because I think that old bike that worked all the time was a permanent entity. I thought that was just going to keep on trucking for me. Oh, well. So we ascribe this like permanent functionality to things, and then we meet life, and then everything's breaking. Well, not everything's... Yeah, well, pretty much everything's breaking. And, so we get frustrated, right? So he says, if you don't view it that way, you can see it's process. Like, wow, look at what my bike looks like now. And people who have really intimate relationships with their bicycles know this. They work on their bikes all the time, and they're like, yeah, this is the way my bike is now, of course. Like, of course I know that, because I was taking care of the chain, and I knew it was getting a little loose, and that's part of what happens. But Dogen is, he doesn't talk about bicycles at all. I'm not sure why. He moves on and says, the way the self arrays itself is the form of the entire world. The way that the self arrays itself is the form of the entire world. Well, now, I'm not exactly sure that's how I view the way the self is arraying itself. I thought there was a self here and the world was out there doing something to me that I have to either enjoy or judge or fix. This is the way that the self arrays itself is the entire world. So this world here is the self arraying itself. There's not some you that's separate from it arraying itself the way it is right now. That's time being. The process has arrived like this. Whatever this is. Including all the things that yourself is and all the things that yourself isn't. It's all just the way the world arraying itself in the form of the entire world. So, Genjo Koan, which is like Dogen's little clip notes for himself, he talks about time a lot because this time... Well, impermanence is a basic problem that Buddhism is about, and he investigates impermanence and other elements of time a lot. It's really important to his vision for practice. So in Genjo Kon, he talks about it quite a bit. And at one point, he says, if you examine the myriad things with a confused body and mind, you might assume that your mind and nature are permanent. But when you practice intimately and return to where you are, you will realize that nothing at all has unchanging self. I'll say that again. If you examine the myriad things, that means everything, phenomena, if you examine stuff, if you examine the myriad things with a confused body and mind, you might assume that your mind and nature are permanent. But when you practice intimately and return to where you are, you'll realize that nothing at all has unchanging self. So this rings true. A permanent, it seems like too strong a word. But I can tell you, as I go through my life, it seems like there's a me that keeps on going, and stuff outside is changing. That's what it seems like. It seems like there's this persistent sense of moving through the world. Moving through the world. Earlier on in the Gendro Koan says, to carry the self forward and experience myriad things is delusion. So this sense that seems very persistent in my experience, that there's a me that's moving through the world, is illusory, because the way the self arrays itself is the form of the entire world. This whole thing. This belief in a persistent self is, of course, handy, you know, because, like, I don't know, I got to mow my lawn and stuff. In fact, I really have to mow my lawn. Don't come over. So, anyway, this persistent self, it gets problematic, you know. Like, you go, I hate rain, or I hate hot weather, or I hate snow. What's your favorite? Many of us have our favorite kind of weather to hate. And then instead of meeting the world, all we meet is our idea about ourselves. When it rains, instead of seeing rain, what it's like, which is actually pretty amazing, we just meet my idea about how there's a persistent person who hates this thing. That's not a very interesting person, frankly. It's the least interesting person I carry around with me. And, you know, we have this with activities. Oh, I hate this part of my job. And then we have to suffer when we get to that part of our job, because we're just carrying that. I had a long career as a recording artist and performer. And don't get excited, I was really not famous. But, you know, I wrote songs, and I put out records, and I toured, and it was cool. It was great. I feel really grateful to have been able to do it. And, you know, at some point, I just decided I didn't want to do that. I wanted to do other things, like hang out here with you guys, because this is pretty awesome. And it was hard. It was hard. And the reason it was hard was very clear. It was because I thought I was a musician. And I thought, if I wasn't a musician, I didn't know what I was. And it was painful. It was painful to be like, what even am I? I had a very persistent idea about who I was and what made me valuable in the world. And to just go, I'm going to do something else. Wouldn't it be cool if you could just say, I'm just going to do something else. I'm going to quit hating rain. Wouldn't that be cool? I'm going to quit yelling at my children. Wouldn't that be great? I'm going to quit hating people from other political persuasions. Wouldn't that be great? But because we have a persistent idea of ourselves, we can't just go like that. So instead, we come here and we look at the wall. And something happens. We loosen up these stories. There gets to be a break in the story about who we are. Maybe even a break about this sense that there's a persistent self that's observing the world. Dogen starts by saying, Uji is everything that can possibly be conceived of is included in what I'm talking about with time being. And then he says, and we get stuck on this idea that things don't change. And then he says, and we really get stuck on the idea that our self doesn't change. But then he moves on. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about, let me do this. Dogen tends to present what I would call a twofold model of time. time is completely momentary. And I say there is just this moment of experience, the locus of our practice. This is where we can practice. I mean, we can imagine practicing tomorrow, but we really can't do it. We can practice now. So there's this momentary time, and then there's infinite time. And what he doesn't really want to talk about very much is some kind of gradual progression of objects that maintain a persistent self. He says what you should focus on is the infiniteness of things and the complete nowness of things. So, he says here, things do not hinder one another, just as moments do not hinder one another. Things do not hinder one another, just as moments do not hinder one another. Moments don't hinder each other. Do you think that the last moment is kind of like messing with this moment? Or like this moment is going to kind of get in the way of the next one happening? We don't think that way. So in this way, he's being helpful. He's like, every once in a while, I'll say, yeah, you actually do know this. Sometimes he says, you don't know what the heck's going on. And then I'll go, hey, look, actually, doesn't this just make sense? This moment just flows. He talks a lot about flowing. Things flow into each other. So moments aren't messing with each other. They're just doing what they're doing. Boom. Just a broken bicycle. Just me lying in the street. Just me feeling the pain of leaving identity behind. Just me opening up to the joy of a new possibilities. And for you Dogenophiles, this is, what you call the Dharma position. Things Dharma position. Dharma in this case means phenomenal position. Everything has its absolutely momentary phenomenalness. So like there's just this shape, a silvery thing that I'm looking at. It's just what it is right now. Can I just be with it as it is without going, let me make a story up about it. Let me make a story up about the wall. How many people who've done some good Zen wall sitting have been like, thinking about the bumpiness of the wall. I want to make a story. Can I find some kind of a story? And even if your cognitive mind doesn't make a story, you start actually seeing things in the wall, right? Ooh, it's the face of the Buddha. Oh, it's the devil. You know what? It's cartoons. The mind is just desperately doesn't want to just say, this is just whatever it is. It's not used to doing that. But we get a lot of invitations around here. So now we could say, well, there's only this moment. You get some good Zen type people. There's only this moment. That sounds pretty cool. That's pretty limited, actually. And this isn't Dogen, but I just got to say, consciousness only experiences things in a momentary form, right? Your consciousness doesn't experience anything, even if it's something in the past or the future. It experiences it as a momentary experience. So for us to think that things are momentary because that's the way our consciousness experiences them is really silly. It'd be like imagining that, a good example would be like, do you believe that there are radio waves? There seems to be some evidence that they're out there because I can turn on my radio, but I can't perceive them. So consciousness is limited in a lot of ways. And one of them is it just experiences things momentarily. But that's cool because that means what we have to do is broken down into such a small thing. Just this activity. Because consciousness can only meet the universe in a moment, then that's all we got to take care of. Doesn't it take the pressure off? However, each moment is all being. This is Dogen from Uji. Each moment is all being, is the entire world. Reflect now whether any being or any world is left out of the present moment. massive, infinite interdependence. Dogen starts out by giving us the idea that we get it real well already. The time being has the quality of flowing. Time seems to flow. So-called today flows into tomorrow. Yeah, right? Today flows into yesterday. Yesterday flows into today. And today flows into today. Tomorrow flows into tomorrow. Flowing. Massive interdependence. Beyond any way we can possibly conceive of it. Now, personally, I've done enough Buddhism stuff where I'm like, yeah, the past all comes together, the infinite past comes together and forms this moment of experience. Wow. But that, what I won't do too many quotations about this, but basically every single moment in every possible spatial or temporal position is infinitely connected to every other single moment of every possible spatial or temporal position. All directions, not unidirectional. And if we want to find some way to think about this, maybe the easiest way is to use one of our most powerful implements, which is the heart. Think about this if you're familiar with the Nelson Mandela, I think, was instrumental in South Africa in having what was called a truth and reconciliation process. And so what they did is they'd had a really horrible war, many, many years. They'd had massive systemic racial oppression. And they they're working their way out of it. And one of the things they did to deal with it is they just had people sit and actually talk honestly and be heard about their experiences, what they did and what they experienced, the pain, the trauma, the violence, and there was no punishment. There was no retribution. It was just presence to suffering for parties on both sides of the conflict. Now, can you feel that this healed the pain of the past? Healing the pain of the past. And I was walking this morning trying to think of some other way to talk about this, and I remembered I'm walking, and my father's father, my grandfather, left my grandmother when my father was an infant or before he was born. I actually don't know. I just recently learned his name. And that's painful for people. People who do that experience pain, and people around them feel pain. And my father died 15 years ago. And yet I still feel like my activity of practicing meditation and learning to have a life of compassion and joy heals that pain. I feel it. So time flows in all directions. Mahapajapati founded the order of women's, the first women's order in Buddhism. She was the first ordained woman. And in her enlightenment poem, she says, "I have been mother, son, father, brother, grandmother. Knowing nothing of the truth, I journeyed on." She saw that she'd been everything. But feeling like a separate, persisting thing, she kept having to wander, look for the next thing. She just let go of all those identities and was just here, taking care of the thing, delivering a poem, beautiful poem. So, just to revisit this thing, which is a persistent theme in Dogen, so for us Dogen nuts, we want to take something away from this. Can I have something to grasp? I would like something to grasp. Total momentariness and absolute total infiniteness in connection. What's he say? Firewood abides in the phenomenal expression of firewood, which fully includes future and past and is independent of future and past. Total solitary momentariness, total interdependence. Not just, I'm cruising through the world trying to deal with a bunch of crap that bumps up against me, which gets tiresome. What if I just meet this activity wholeheartedly and realize that in meeting it, I'm meeting everything with everything that I could be? From Uji, do not think that time merely flies away. Do not see flying away as the only function of time. If time merely flies away, you would be separated from time. I'll read that again. Do not think that time merely flies away. Do not see flying away as the only function of time. If time merely flies away, you would be separated from time. Time's not flying away from us. We are time. Our transformation is. That's what is. I think I'm quoting Bill Clinton right now. He once said on the stand, that depends on your definition of what is, when being questioned by an attorney. So, my answer to Bill Clinton is, we're time, we're flowing. It's not just flying away from us. Yesterday, we had a beautiful retreat here. It was really nice. And Susan, who is upstairs, so she can't hear me talking about how great it was, gave a really beautiful talk about the one who is not busy. The one who is not busy. And it comes from an old koan. Someone says, see, there's one who's not busy. He's sweeping. His friend says, you look busy. He says, there's one who's not busy. And this is just... This is one of these stories that, you know, I'll probably bore everyone to death with within like a year. But I just remember one day I was driving somewhere. Every Thursday I had to get from work to another meeting in a big hurry. And it was stressful, 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 stressful. And I hate being late. I hate being late, right? Persistent self, which hates lateness. What about just, this is what's here? Anyway, there I was in an automobile. Many stories about suffering involve automobiles. Keep this in mind. Walk. Ride a bike. I'm not kidding. Everything's connected. It's like we know that we're ruining the planet. It's like we know it. Anyway, I arrived at my destination. Or I was just arriving, and I was like, God, and I'm late for this, and I got to do these other 8 things, and I've been so busy all day. Ah! I was just wound up. And then, grace. I was just like, busy is not possible. It's an illusion. I can't do anything but be here. And it was so vivid. It was so complete. Hands on a wheel, beating heart, images in the visual field. You can't be busy. Well, sure you can. Go ahead. But it's always just an illusion, a story made out of an idea of a persistent self that fights its way through time, flying away from us. And we can learn to just be in the activity, in the dynamism, in the total connection. That's our practice. The time being, Dogen again, reading Dogen. The time being of all beings throughout the world, in water and on land, is just the actualization of your complete effort. Right now, all beings of all kinds in the visible and invisible realms are the time being actualized by your complete effort, flowing due to your complete effort. Closely examine this flowing.
without your complete effort right now, nothing would be actualized. Nothing would flow.
I'm just going to read that again.
The time being of all beings throughout the world in water and on land is just the actualization of your complete effort right now. All beings of all kinds in the visible and invisible realms are the time being actualized by your complete effort, flowing due to your complete effort. Closely examine this flowing. Without your complete effort right now, nothing would be actualized. Nothing would be flowing. So we take the pressure off completely. Just this. Just this. But the whole world depends on just this. So much depends. It matters. Your effort matters moment to moment. It touches everyone. Infinite connectivity. Infinite interdependence. And what is complete effort? And we think, oh, my complete effort, that's when I'm really doing it. No, the completeness of your effort. Even if you don't know you're making an effort, it's complete. It's doing something. So when we're completely oblivious and we're just operating automatically, that's what we're putting in the world. When we're not examining these assumptions we make about time and race and gender and money and the environment, that's the complete effort we carry forward. But if we closely examine this flowing, what is this flowing in here, in this heart, in this mind, in this activity? Our effort can be more complete. And what we put into this vast, unknowable whole can be healing. Healing the past. Healing the future. Healing the present. And at the end of this essay, Dogen talks a lot about the body, but the sections are really hard to understand, so I'm not going to read them. But I'm just going to say he just comes to all these body images, eyes, eyebrows, in the body. This is where we realize this. Buddha said, it is in this very fathom-long body, fathom, 6 feet, it is in this very fathom-long body that I teach the world, the origination of the world, and the cessation of the world. Right here. Deep awareness of the body, what the body is doing, what it feels like. This is the basis of this practice. The body doesn't know how to project into the future and the past. It just shows us present. So it can hold us here. Help us stay here. Simple activities of the body affect everything. They really matter. Thank you all. Well, it would be wonderful to hear other people speak in the form of either questions or comments.
So when you were talking about basically, I don't remember the exact phrase that you put out there, but is it like a microcosm, macrocosm kind of thing? Like, you know, everything exists within each other. Is that what you're explaining when you were talking about
like the interdependence component?
No, you were talking about the body. It's like everything else. The body's like the planets. It changes. It has a birth.
Being body time and time body does.
Yeah,
like the
universe.
I'm trying to remember which phrase it was that you...
I don't remember what you are... But, you know, I don't know, macrocosm, microcosm, what that they reflect each other? Is that the idea of those terms?
Microcosm, macrocosm, it's like, so down to the smallest particle, the entire universe is contained in, you know, bigger galaxies or whatever are just a larger representation of that same thing.
Yeah. It's just how we're looking at it. In Genjo Kon, at some point, Dogen is talking about this vast ocean of infinite enlightenment. And then he goes, in one drop of water. No, he says, you can find this in one drop of water. And then the next phrase is, a fish swims in the ocean. He takes a drop of water. He doesn't say they're the same thing. He just goes from one line to the other. Just say, look, it's all perspective. I think so, yeah.
So how do you know when your mind is confused?
Ooh.
And why do you have to mull your mind?
Good question. I mow my lawn. Have to, might be inaccurate. I mean, I like to avoid fines from the city. So there's a lot of practical things. I like to mow my lawn because I think it makes my neighbors like it when I do. It feels good to them. That's probably the main reason. Because they have these beautiful lawns, and I'm kind of, yeah. I think that's the main thing I think of is kindness. But there's also, you know, shame. Oh, I don't want to be the one who left out. So then, what was your other question?
How do you know when your mind is confused? It's your mind that you're hoping recognizes when it's confused.
Yeah, well, confused. So in Mahayana thought, delusion is when you think anything is true. So the bar is pretty high there. But then you might have a more practical understanding of confusion, like, you know, I really think it would be great to explain to you at great length about how you're wrong about this. And then I go, I'm confused. That's probably not helpful. But I don't know if I'm really answering your question. I mean, am I even getting in the right direction?
I'm trying to think of a good metaphor for it. You're relying on what you see as a sluggish watchdog to watch your door. How can you? You want to have trust in it.
Right, right. Yeah, well, here, I don't focus on having a watchdog to watch the door. Our practice is opening up by allowing awareness to rest in the body. It allows awareness to expand beyond the narrowness of a constricted stream of thinking. And that constricted stream of thinking begins to just be part of the phenomena of the world. And then I don't really go, oh, I'm confused or deluded. It's just like that stuff that would just be a life of complete delusion is just part of what's happening. It's less dominating.
I think maybe the limitations of cause and effect, which we rely on to make predictions, and it's difficult to notice that a predicted effect isn't happening since we rely on it. But that is what I, you know, from what you all said, that sort of, you know, to me, where practicality means Buddhism, you still have to operate and still make plans and all of that. But they can limit us. Well, they will limit us. That's because we're human. And then if we have moments of distress, and maybe in those moments of distress, maybe we have the best chance to wake up to, oh shit, I can't predict all of that, and I can't manage all of that, and things are going to happen to me, and actually I'm still safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, being able to open up to how we are and just be with it. That's in a lot of Mahayana texts, they talk about the great tolerance of the Bodhisattva, Kshanti, They're not talking about tolerating anything but their own pain and confusion.
So I like what you said about effort, and that it includes kind of a whole universe in the context of time being, meantime. So we have this concept of right effort or solid effort, and it seems to open it up that really a lot of our efforts, even if they seem to fall short in the context of time being, and we're aware of them, maybe we're all just fine.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like, oh, don't worry too much about being right or wrong with your efforts, as long as you're kind of being sincere or aware of it.
Yeah, I think that's pretty cool. Though here, it does soften that need to figure out whether we're right or wrong. But I think the main way that this time being teaching does it is by softening our attachment to the outcome, because the outcome is outside of this moment. So the outcome is like infinite, basically incomprehensible or momentary. But it does soften in that way too, and yeah. But the sincerity. You're absolutely right. Just make your complete effort right now. We're not going to know. How can I really know? I think, yeah, that's right.
Jason, the best I can do is I'm a little less confused at times. Really, we're always confused.
Every Friday, there's been a group of people who go to the government center and Minneapolis, and in some way or another, urge Prosecutor Freeman to prosecute the police who killed Jamar Clark back in November. And several weeks ago, just after Freeman announced that he was not going to prosecute the police, we were there again, I don't know, a couple of dozen of us. And actually, the media was there too, because they wanted to see what was going to happen. And one of the things that happened was, because we've all kind of gotten to know each other and we had just suffered a defeat, people were hugging each other. People of different genders, people with different amounts of melanin in their skin. And these hugs were very heartfelt and warm, very supportive. Later in the day, I was out walking on Nicollet Mall, and a guy I know, the name of Eric, who's a busker, he sings gospel on Nicollet Mall, and if you spend any time out there at all, you may have seen him. He's an African-American guy, been homeless for a while. He's currently going to the Salvation Army School in St. Louis to become a major in the Salvation Army. He's had drug issues and so forth. And we talk. And so as I passed by him, he said, "Hey, I saw you on TV." And he was talking about the thing that we had just done at the government center. He said, "Thanks so much. We have to keep fighting back." And he gave me a hug. So we hugged each other, and I moved on. And I don't know, I got maybe half a block away. And somehow I had this opening that, you know, we are, each of us, this is the way it came to me at that point, maybe because I knew this kind of Christian perspective, we are each of us God, and we're kind of stuck into this, to use Dobin's words, the fathom-long body, right? Mm-hmm. And that fact of being placed in this body conditions how we look at the world and how we act to each other, how we interact, how we daily construct the world. You know, each of us together, we build this world. And at this point, I was walking past Macy's, where there are these mannequins who are offering all these material things to us to make us feel better. And the absurdity of this world that we construct together just floored me. That's a story.
Well, I believe in hugging. And I believe, you know, if you want to affect change with massive intractable problems like racism, like the way we relate to the planet, like there's so many, and each one of us, maybe different ones touch our hearts. If you work to do something about it, if you view each thing you try to achieve, you can become very frustrated, because we often, the thing we try to get done doesn't get done. But this teaching of Dogen's is, make your momentary effort, and the impact will be beyond what you can know, and it's the way you make your effort. Make it with love. Make it with commitment. Don't make it with violence. You're just putting violence in the world. But don't give up. Your complete effort creates all beings on land and on water.